Hello, everyone, and welcome to JFG Tonight. It's amazing how things are going well. Things are going well for us in the news. The normies are getting totally owned in a free speech environment, and it's beautiful to see. And it's going so well also in my life. I published a little video to show you guys my 3D space that I built for the game that I'm currently working on. I'm super enthusiastic about how fast the development went to this point where, okay, now I have to establish the scenario of the game and all, but 3D space working with the animals moving, we're already there. And multiplayer already functioning. It's absolutely beautiful. Everything is going so beautifully well. I couldn't ask anything more from life. Naberius has said something very interesting. I hadn't remembered this, but that is a very good observation. He says, funny how Peterson railed against anonymous accounts with right-wing opinions and now rails against real accounts with very similar rhetoric. Psychopath, for example. Just shows the BS of psychological arguments and how they're just used to weakly and fetishously dismiss political opponents. Absolutely. It's interesting how Peterson switched because when Nick Fuentes was not on Twitter, it was these little demon anonymous people. But of course you end up with anonymous people. Because if someone works under his real name, he cannot flee from past statements of his. So in a regime of censorship, working under your real name means that it will be attached to you forever and you're going to get banned like Nick Fuentes got banned. But that's because of the regime of censorship. Now we have censorship being ended, at least partly, by Elon Musk. And you should be happy about it. But no, he goes at Nick Fuentes with exactly the same fallacious and yes, emotionally based, psychologically based argument. And we've been through this in blood sports. They are just invalid. And you guys who are following me, I know that you're intelligent and you see those psychological constructs for what they are. But most people think that labeling something an emotion is good enough to win a debate. And someone like Alex Stein did this exactly on Modern Day Debate. That was 2 days ago, Saturday night. I enjoyed the debate. I think, just like it is said in the comments, I think I destroyed him. I destroyed him kindly. I didn't dunk on him or anything. It was framed as a friendly discussion rather than a debate, but through that discussion, I scored very solid points, and ultimately what Alex Stein is making an error of is thinking that, oh, JF, you're just emotional. That's not an argument. Because, okay, well, what about JF2 here? I just copied myself. Duplicate JF. Duplicate JF number 2 is all that JF is without emotions. Duplicate JF number 2 does the exact same argument as JF number 1, but he does it without the emotion. I mean, this is the thought experiment of the philosophical zombie. So what if white nationalist says JF has no emotions. That is the funniest thing. You're talking to one of the greatest artists in the world. Like, I don't approach these political problems with any sort of emotion. And he's attributing emotions to me. But anyways, you can easily get rid of the emotional argument by imagining, what if someone else without my emotions, let's say that I'm a very emotional man, what if someone else without my emotions was to make the same argument? And anyways, what are emotions? And I tried to get toward this in the debate. Emotions are, well, at least how they are conceived. Emotions are first and foremost virtual, delusionary constructs of the brain. But Leaving that aside, emotions, if you think of them as drive to actions, these actions are, they exist for a reason. Anger exists for a reason. Prejudice exists for a reason. Hate exists for a reason. And to any emotion you can list, I will list you possible game theoretic outcomes that they seek to address. If you have an emotion of betrayal, it's because it's not good to repeatedly interact with people who have betrayed you. So at some point, your brain says, no more. I will not be exploited by this person anymore. So that is why you have the emotion of betrayal. Now, is that wrong? Am I wrong if based on the emotion of betrayal, I stop interacting with someone? Well, no, you're right. Driven by emotion means driven by the evolutionary system that led to your brain being in such a way. So it's not because something is emotionally driven that it would be false. Anyways, it's kind of a moot point because ultimately the argument I've made, and you know, I didn't want necessarily to take the side of Biden. I think it turned extremely good. I was scared because it's kind of a trollish position. It's kind of the Richard Spencer position, starting to cheer for Biden rather than just not be enthusiastic at Trump. My true position is I'm not enthusiastic at Trump. But James came to me and said, Jeff, do you want to debate Trump versus Biden? And I like to deliver. You know, I understand that finding guests who are willing to debate is a key resource for someone like James at Modern Day Debate. So I'm always willing to bend myself a little bit just to accommodate someone who comes to me with an invitation. So when James came to me, I said, well, I can't Trump versus Biden. I want to say yes to you, but I can't take for Trump. So I'm going to have to take for Biden. So that's how it went. And it kind of pushed me into a trollish position, which ended up, I didn't look like a troll at all during the performance of the debate because Alex Stein didn't push it toward the trolling direction and really tried to engage with me. And it was a very productive in the end discussion. I was interested at knowing if I set myself to make an argument for Biden, what would be the best argument I can make? And I delivered it. I delivered it in a way that it surprised myself in terms of, wow, that's a solid argument. So the basis of my whole debate was we need to punish Trump. Not out of emotion, just we need to punish Trump because else we will keep being exploited by centrists who will progressively take over the Republican Party and they won't feel accountable to any form of right-wing basis because they will consider the right-wing vote pre-acquired. This is one of the most hilarious things I've seen in my life. The mayor of New York is announcing trash collection. But the way he brags about it, it's like, mic drop. We're introducing trash cans to New York. Now what?
You know, welcome to our trash revolution and
you can't make this shit up. The whole music, how is that not idiocracy? I mean, this is the rediscovery. It's the rediscovery of the trash collection process that is described in idiocracy. In idiocracy, they have this whole problem that there's the mountain of trash. The mountain of trash has accumulated and it's like bigger than the city itself. And they're faced with trash avalanches. And eventually they rediscover, thanks to the man traveling from the past into the future, they rediscover the concept of trash management. They rediscover water. They rediscover everything that's needed for Western life. Trash avalanche. Yes, a trash avalanche. Yeah, Idiocracy is a very special movie. As I've said recently, one of the only movie that gains with time. It really gets better with time. Idiocracy, when you watched it when it was released or close to after, you had the impression it was a comedy. When you look at it today, you start counting how many of these things I've seen happen in my life. How many of these predictions can be now seen as prediction? Here is a video of my little game that I'm setting up. Life Planetary Insemination. It's the story of a man who is stuck on planet Earth with a 2 out of 10 girlfriend, who's a feminist and she's annoying, and he gets, he says, all right, either I stay in this hell or I take a spaceship and I go die at the front line of the war against other species. And he decides, well, rather than injure my current wife, I'm going to go inseminate other planets. Life, planetary insemination. That is the story behind it. And right now I have this whole world that is a voxel world. I relied on a lot of work by other people. Some people have programmed this 3D space in C++. That is Zilan, who's a French guy, very talented. And then I use Sketchfab animals and their little animations, but I put it all together into a dynamic system that is multiplayer. And eventually the goal, of course, is that there will be much more decor and there will be fights between the pets, and the goal will be to breed the pets. But if you want to see the game in development, it is like Minecraft, in the sense that it's a voxel game with cubes that you can add and destroy. You will see some of that destruction in the video. So without further ado, here's some demonstration of the 3D world as it stands. I've been working on this for, at this point, about 2 weeks. So, man, when I started the programming when I was a teenager, with Dark Basic, Visual Basic, Visual C Sharp, I never got to a 3D space fully functional multiplayer in 2 weeks. That was taking 6 months. At this point, they have worked the Godot engine, and Godot engine is super interesting. I'm fascinated by what I'm discovering, and I want to show you the video, but I'm so excited at the Godot engine. they have overdone it to be so easy that it's almost annoying sometimes, because sometimes you want the code, sometimes you don't want to click to enable functions, you want it in code. But they have made everything so easy, the whole process of 3D and 2D worlds. I mean, look at this. I came to this in 2 weeks. So first thing you can notice is the animals are foraging on their own timer. I've set a random value that varies between 5 and 10 seconds. They will, they will basically do a They will do an idle animation every second or two. And then they will go forage elsewhere and walk away between 5 to 10 second cycles. And you can see the dog moving on this player. This player is connected by network to this player, and the dogs, they move at the same time. This is all coordinated by the computers using RPC signaling. Here, cute lobster, idle, forward cycle. So I fix on the lobster on the left, and you can see coordinated movement across the two computers. Character is a black rectangle. Forward cycle again, the lobster moves. You can add anything in this 3D space. You can add foliage. You can add redstone. Boom, boom. Whatever you want to add. You can remove also. Here I remove some dirt. I will replace it. And here you can see the character update cycle is extremely good. I mean, you can see me move naturally from the other screen, which is a network connection. Little snake eating the dirt. We have some fowl or peacock. I don't know. We have a swan. Right now, I have 85 species of animals that are integrated to the game, and I already have the models for many more hundreds. There will be extreme variety in the natural world. One of the differences between Minecraft and this, the goal of this game will not be to create like Minecraft. It's not creative stuff. It will be a competitive game of war between your animals that you breed and the animals that are bred by the other side. And it will eventually clash. And today I was working on the logic of aggro. So people who know gaming, you know what it is. It's the idea that when a monster of yours meet another monster of the other team, they need to walk toward each other and start attacking each other in a certain radius. The bird flu says, oh, like Spore? Well, I went to check Spore because I didn't remember. I thought I had never played this. Now, I played it yesterday. I bought it, actually. It was on sales on Steam for $5. So I bought it, played it. I remember now, I played that game before. It's really not going to be like Spore. Really not going to be like Spore. Because Spore, you are the life form. You eat the little bacteria and you evolve. This is another thing. This is planet engineering. So you are basically a human or a humanoid who is going to have to manage an ecological system. You're going to have to go get some worms on the planet so that you can feed your pigs, so that you can feed your spiders. You're going to have the spiders so that you can feed your birds, and you're going to feed the birds, and you're going to have carrots, and you're going to feed the carrots to the pigs. And eventually you're going to have your pig, and then you're going to send it to war. So basically very different from Spore. And Spore, I'm not super impressed. In terms of modeling evolution, someone else came with a suggestion. It's called Species. Now, it's a game that is dated a little bit. I think it came out a year or two ago or more. I don't know. In any case, Species is interesting. But it's a game of evolution. My game will not be a game where you can evolve anything. The goal of my game will not be to create new creature, because Species, you look at their video, I mean, it leads to animals that you wouldn't even recognize. It's like, oh, it's a blob and it advances. Well, that blob is good in that environment. Okay, that's not what I want. I want really a game of the dynamics of ecology and resource management, and as part of life, as part of an ecosystem, if you will. And I want this to be a battle arena type of game. So very different from Spore, from Species, from Minecraft. This is going to be much closer to Dota than any of these games. He ultimately is going to be five player against five player, ELO based system. So it's going to be competitive. You're going to be paired against people who are as good as you. And it's going to be five teams of five whose synchronization and communication within the team will be absolutely crucial. It will be the difference like tenfold. A team that doesn't talk to itself will not be able to organize, because I have some beefaloes in there. They are hard to... You need to poison them. You need to poison them to make them sleep. But I've designed the poison darts so that they are not good enough. A single dart is not enough to make the beefalo sleep. So you're going to have three people coordinating a hunt in which they have to approach the beefalo like the triceratops in... Like the Velociraptor in Jurassic Park. Like, you're going to have to be hunting the buffalo from two, three angles. You're going to have to be silent, because if you scare it, it's going to run. And you're going to be like, poison darts. The three at the same time, you get your single buffalo. You can start reproducing. You can start breeding the buffalo. Anyways, let's continue watching the video. So here I'm demonstrating the bazooka, which was already integrated in the 3D world by Zillan. He had enabled a bazooka destruction of the cubes of the world. So look at this. I mean, the frequency of update is fresh. You can see in the multiplayer world, I'm shooting a bazooka from this computer. And look, pay attention to this. This is a separate computer connected through network LAN. And look at when the rocket will make an explosion. It's totally synchronous. Look at the cubes. The rocket is operating across the multiplayer world. So the bazooka will be a tool that will not be... It will not be a tool that we can abuse in the multiplayer game. You're going to have to mine a lot of charcoal before you can create a single rocket. So there will be three roles in this team of five. And the idea is, I don't know. Do you want three warriors or do you want four warriors? Do you want two warriors? The warriors' job is they are at the front line and they are fighting alongside the flow of pigs and other life forms that are coming to them. They gain levels. They gain levels as they are combating the other side. And the warrior is ultimately necessary to win the game. They have to push on their lanes, just like it is in a MOBA. Now you have another class of character, which is the miner. The miner's job will be to set up the base, to set up the production factories so that you get your carrots, your vegetables grown. They feed your pigs. They feed your life forms. You put them in enclaves. They grow. They make babies. They send to the front line. So the miner's job is to go collect resources. Miners. And then the other class of character, and you can play, you can do a mix. You can be both miner and warrior. You can be both, you can be anything you want. Then the other class will be the hunters. The hunter's job is to poison dart a diversity of animals in the forest, bring them back to base, and feed the front line with new specimens as they undertake their breeding. That is what it looks like. And the hunter is also collecting various fruits of the jungle to bring back to the base to build the ecosystem. Yes, capture, new guy. Their job will be to capture. Now you can kill the animal once you see it in the forest. but it's going to give you a single piece of meat. What is the big goal of the game is to, rather than kill it, is to capture it alive and set up your breeding factories in the base. I love this shit so much. You have no idea how much. And yeah, a new guy says multiple resources. I'm talking here about only in the diversity of the animal category. We're talking about a diversity of more than 400 species. I have went across the whole tree of life. There will be bacteria that facilitate the factories. There will be bacteria for composting. There will be the whole tree of life will be represented in this game. Stuff that you didn't even know existed. Microorganism, protozoa, lots of stuff will be in there. Just the animals. I have already 400 and it's counting. It's going to be more than this. When we go into the vegetation, I have documented about 180 different types of plants, flowers and algas that I want involved. And so, yeah, I want this to, I want you, you will play this game alongside some encyclopedia. Basically, you're going to need a wiki. You're going to need a big book to say, all right, how, yes, fungi will be represented, fungi, real base talk, absolutely. There will be a variety of fungi. I haven't went through the listing of them yet, but I can easily imagine 100 items of diverse fungi types and properties that they would give. Stephen Robinson says TRP. TRP is the one thing that I don't think that I will represent in live planetary insemination. Perhaps there will be a second installment of the game one day. That will be perhaps digging the theme of phenotypic revolutions more closely. But I don't see how we can organize a phenotypic revolution when there's so much themes already to be digged in. It would be very hard to say, all right, well, here's a phenotypic revolution at the end of the game or whatever. New guy says, well, sounds like you've already put in a lot of thought. Keep going. Yes, it emerged in my head progressively throughout the years. I've always been wanting to do stuff that's educational and interesting. I don't want stuff to be just educational. I want stuff to be both entertaining and educating. But the form of the game, as I think of it now, only emerged in my mind a month or two ago, I think. So this whole setup, I just sat down and I wrote down on a notepad all that I wanted to do. Will there be a crafting mechanic? Absolutely, there will be some sort of crafting. That's what the miner will do, basically. They will be responsible for the flow of resources from digging the single blocks to translating them into useful tools for the breeding factories. Let's continue with the bazooka, just to show you the frequency of update of the physics engine. I will start clicking as fast as I can on the mouse to create a lot of rockets. And look at this, you can dig. There are millions of voxels. You can dig. Never get tired. I basically dug myself a tunnel by sending huge amounts of bazooka. Boom, boom. I love the quickness of it. I love things that are well programmed. Today I was doing the agro stuff and it's beautiful, it's elegant. I love timers, I love signals. I love when, like, the current resources used by the game, 130 megabytes in the RAM. Now, look, I loaded all of the animal animations at the same time that I have. So you have a copy of each of the animals that are possible in the game. We're just at 130 megabytes. So much more can be done. This world can grow by 10,000 fold, I think, and wouldn't put much strain on a modern computer. And so I love when things are well programmed, and Godot Engine leaves you. Godot Engine comes with a proposition that is very physical. They annoy you with physics process, and they synchronize a lot of stuff to the physics engine. But my strategy of coding is totally different. But Godot leaves you do it, lets you do it. Frederick says, is it programmed in Java? No, it's C# and Godot. So my strategy of programming relies on using the least possible checks, the least possible loops, the least possible CPU cycles. And so most of the actions of these animals are based on very, very slow timers. Sometimes I will check a variable every 10 seconds. And I'm using these various loops to enact stuff that instead of enacting it frame by frame, I always ask myself, does this peacock really need to react by the frame? No. This peacock is just chilling around. So we don't even need frame by frame update. He needs a goal. And so that goal will be set in the object. And then he needs a timer that just checks to make sure that there aren't other goals that are conflicting. But we can do this every second. We can do this every 5 seconds. That is how I approach programming. So as I stated on Twitter, this is a game I'm currently building for fun. Godot Engine, multiplayer, ecological management, MOBA. Those are two instances playing in the same multiplayer world. Now, I gave myself some loose here. I said, should be out sometime after GTA 6, if all goes well. And that's because people think GTA 6 may never come. So it will be ready whenever it's ready. NN says, remember when a game was like 0.5 megabytes? No, I haven't talked about Peterson yet. Amazingly, I'm so fascinated at this programming that I'm doing that I've been talking about it for 30 minutes. So let's get into the news so that we can get to the Peterson segment. This guy, what the fuck?
People say, well, why are you so bothered about Israel? And I hear that from the right. The left don't care. They know I'm beyond saving. But on the right, I hear that. And I think they don't realize.
Douglas Murray, by the way, is said to be a non-Jew. Said to be coming from a Christian background. Is gay. But has been so integrated into the circle of intellectual Jewry that I don't know that the difference matters at this point. I mean, this guy has been putting a vest on to go cover pro-Israel stuff in Gaza. This guy went further than a lot of Jews in America. He went to do coverage locally of the Gaza situation so that there would be a pro-Israel voice covering stuff there.
They think it's some weird thing. Like, why is this small state? Why does it bother you? I don't think they've even remotely reflected on what I regard as the deepest reasons to care. It seems to me, if, as you well know...
Look, you're gay, okay? The extent of your contribution to this world as a perimation date, like a yogurt. You have no consequence in the world beyond 10 to 20 years from now when you die. You are not invested in the continuing world that heterosexual Christians are invested in. So you, what you spout here are just the best products that you can come with to be paid by your masters, by whoever it is that employs you and that makes sure that you are on the hook for your 10,000th interview of Jordan Peterson. You are a local object, Douglas Murray, just like in my game, a little fowl walking around with a cycle, except you don't have a reproductive cycle. The fowl in my game has one. Fuck you.
Western civilization is based on the legacy of Athens and Jerusalem. Athens is under great assault always, but it's not actually under existential assault at the moment. What is being attempted by Israel's enemies is the philosophical and cultural equivalent of burning all the libraries of Alexandria. This is...
Wait a minute. There is no investment we have in Israel of any sort of knowledge preservation. Literally, Israel could be wiped out in a second by a nuclear bomb. Next morning, there wouldn't be a single piece of knowledge lost to Western civilization. We would literally just keep going. It would just keep going like nothing happened. Of course, there would be a bunch of Jews crying, no doubt. But we wouldn't be losing the Library of Alexandria. Are you fucking kidding me?
Is one of the underpinnings of Western civilization utterly, utterly at risk. And
Israel is not an underpinning of Western civilization. Israel is really, it is a backstop for a bunch of people who have refused to fully join Western civilization. Because as Oren McIntyre says it, let's stop the bullshit. Western civilization is Christendom, period. Western civilization is those places that have converted to Christianity in Europe that were populated by the white race. That is what Western civilization is. Now, you could do minus Eastern civilization, minus the Russians, who are a branch of Christianity. Okay. But this Christendom has been rejected by a subpopulation of Western kind, the Jews, the people who became the Jews. That is what is the foundation of Israel. It's a little bit like if we had a bunch of humans who decided to remain Australopithecus, and they didn't get used to money, they didn't get used to computers, they didn't get used to the alphabet. In fact, they stayed in tribal states, basically halfway between the chimpanzee and modern humans. If these people were to exist and they lived in their dirty mud huts out there, it wouldn't matter that we share common ancestry with them. They wouldn't be the basis of Western civilization, just like the Jews are not the basis of Christendom. Now, you may argue that the Bible being a partly ancient testament, you may argue that we have a common ancestor, just like we have a common ancestor with the hot living hypothetical Australopithecus eater of human craniums. But that doesn't mean that the modern form of it that would live beside us in their dirty huts, that doesn't mean that they are our foundation. Our foundation is in the past. And the current people with whom we share common ancestry are not our foundation. That's the difference between a sequential tree you know, a tree where you can see the branches. Life is a tree. But what you see at a point in time is always a life form that's separate from you. What you see at any point in time is never your ancestor. So when you see a fish, yes, we used to be fish, but we didn't used to be fish like the fish that we have today. The fish of the past must have differed from the fish of today. And in fact, the fish of today are different from their common fish ancestor because they have evolved as much as we did from the common fish ancestor. They have as long of an evolutionary story as we do. And Christianity has its own evolutionary history after a separation from the Jews, such that the modern Israel is actually such a virtual construct. It's a social construct, really. But it is certainly not our root. Certainly not. Because it's a construct that has been established by people who didn't want to join in. What you claim is the child of Jewry, Christianity. They didn't want it. They rejected it. They branched out. Yes, Doubting Thomas says it correctly. They got branched out.
Not in a sort of metaphorical way where people might use it as a sort of book subtitle, but the real thing. I mean, I've sometimes thought about it this way. I haven't tried this out in public before. How many Jews are there in the world?
15 million.
15
or so.
Million. Okay. This is going to come. This may come across really coarse. But
there is a problem. The Jews are not self-sustainable. They have totally failed at growing their population, while the African race has grown. While the white race has spread, there is a problem. Maybe it's with your memes. Maybe it's with your genes. But in any case, there is a danger that the people who live close to Jews will be eventually influenced by this very anti-natalist approach to existence where, oh, if I have only one or two children, that will be enough. I'll be happy with life. I don't want any more than this. That's a problem, and it may be contagious.
Let me put it this way. I mean, there are lots of conflicts in the world, and I've covered a lot of conflicts involving a lot of people. But it's conceivable that at some point, 15 million Christians could be killed. It would be a disaster.
Oh, my God, I see where he's going. Oh. He's laying it out like it's a deep intellectual realization, but it is the exact, what he's laying out right here is the exact same thing than what they started saying around October 7th, that one Jewish life is like 100 Christian life. It is the same thing. It is the idea that the October 7th, okay, it killed only 1,100 Jews, but 1,100 Jews out of the total Jewish population is that many persons, and therefore it's like killing 1 million Christians. This is so fallacious, because they are asking us suddenly they are asking us to do accounting by race. Wow. This is what we've been asking for years. For years we've been asking, hey, Isn't it rational for an empirical being to look around him and see, hey, there's that many chance that I'm going to get killed in that neighborhood, and there's that many chance I'm going to get killed in this other neighborhood, and it's probably better, therefore, that I live here rather than there. Isn't it rational to make averages and probabilities and predictions and groups and categories? And my answer and the answer of the race realist has been forever, a category is justified if you can extract value from it. So the minute one group commits more crime than another, one group has lower or higher IQ than another, the the category of that grouping is useful. Is useful. But amazingly, what Douglas Murray says here is siding with race realism, but only in a case where he wants to diminish the value of the suffering of Christians. Because what he's headed to say, we all see it coming, is it would be a dramatic if 15 million Christians die. But it would be so much more dramatic if 50 million Jews died.
A tragedy. It's conceivable that at some point, Burma, India, somewhere, 15 million Muslims could be killed. It would be a disaster. It would be a tragedy of an unimaginable scale, of mid-20th century scale. But if 15 million Jews were killed,
oh,
that's the end of the story. That's it. Now, what does that mean for the Jewish people? It's the end, the people who saw off everyone from Pharaoh to Hitler.
Well, everything ends at some point. And when it ends, it's because you've put yourself in that circumstance. If there was an event that leads to 15 million Christian, 15 million Muslim, and 15 Jews to die at the exact same time, and the question would be, why is it that the Jews have disappeared? Well, the answer would be because they haven't made 600 million babies. Period. That's the answer. When you and this, you can see it at the beginning of the movie, Idiocracy. The families that get extinguished by evolution, they don't just suddenly stop making babies. It's just that they make one or two babies, and it's not enough. And eventually that one or two baby turns out that he makes zero babies. It's always a funneling down. And the fact is, the Jewish people with their number right now and their breeding rate is just not sufficient. The Jews spend too much time doing other things than reproduction to be growing into a contingent that will be sustainable, that could resist a nuclear event that kills 15 million of them.
Disappeared in the 21st century. Everyone else, in my view, wouldn't survive either. Wouldn't survive either.
And this is where I wanted to get this complete lie that if Israel disappeared, we would all die suddenly. Because the Jews are the chosen people, as defined by Eric Weinstein, meaning they are the guide and the light of the world, of the moral world. And yes, you know, Ty Odyssey says, if we're going, everyone is going. It does have echoes of the Samson option. This whole idea that if I can't have you, you know, as he says in Tenet, if I can't have you, then no one can. It is absolutely ridiculous. We do not need a moral light to keep going. To think of yourself so much that you think you are necessary for the rest of existence is probably the great narcissistic error of both Douglas Murray and the Jewish people. If they adhere to the view that he just stated, what kind of narcissism do you have to look at 4 billion years of planetary existence, 4 billion years of life on this earth, life that went on without Jews, without fish, for fuck's sake, without frogs, without salamanders, without birds, without mammals, without protozoa, without mushrooms, without plants. Life has went on, the whole thing that I just listed, life has existed on this earth for at least a billion years without any of what I listed. Just bacteria. Just bacteria and it was fine. Just monkeys and it was fine. Just squirrels and it was fine. Just bears and it was fine. Just fish and it was fine. To think that Israel, which has been existing, which has shown, I mean, it started existing as some people who are still alive today saw it being born. There were people who are alive today who saw Israel being born. To think that this is a necessary component. And how is it a necessary component?
Western civilization could not survive the destruction of the Jewish state. Because it would be, among much else, the cutting away of the whole tree that we're on.
Well, okay. But we constantly cut trees. That's why 99% of the species don't make it. 99.99999% of things don't make it. Do you die if the fish die? Do you die if the bacteria die? Do you die if the viruses die? No. There are plenty numbers of subspecies, species that disappear every year, and it doesn't change our existence. Life goes on. Because life is packaged to sustain future shock.
And Western civilization would die.
How is it? So this is all based on a false theory, a false premise that Israel is our root. It is not. But even if you cut your root, you don't die. You keep going. You keep existing.
So I regard the existential threat against the Jewish people to not just be about the Jewish people.
And this is where he wants to go. So he wants every people to be concerned with the existence of the Jews because necessary it involves your existence too. That is basically the position of extortionism. It's the position of the mob mafia type of guy who comes and says, if you don't make sure that I make a good living from your work, if you don't pay your tax or your dues to the mafioso, he's going to put your restaurant on fire. And it is the Samson option. It is the extortion. And what he's attempting here is basically a moral equivalent of the Samson option. It's to say you should feel concerned. You should feel concerned. Nice civilization you got there. Would be a shame if something happened to it. And he's asking you to be ashamed in advance so that you will protect the Jews to protect yourself. Absolute crap. Absolute lie. What a bunch of bullshit we get served by these people who are funded by the Jews to convince you to side with the Jews. I'm tired of all this. There's been a couple of bannings on Twitter. Yesterday, I did something fascinating. I had never done this. I called Lucas Gage on his stream because his phone number got doxxed, and I was thinking he must be getting a lot of violent threats and harassment. How about I introduce some love into the life of my friend Lucas Gage? So Lucas Gage has been banned from Twitter. Now, Lucas Gage, I've always said it, he always goes a little too far. And it's, I don't want to come here and say he deserves it, because in the end, Elon Musk said you can do legal speech on Twitter. Well, what he's done is legal speech by the criteria of the U.S. under the First Amendment. So what Lucas Gage has done is he has some of his harassers who were harassing him for days, they swatted him, they sent him fake pizza, that kind of stuff. They sent him a Torah, I think, a Talmud, and they sent him an Israeli flag at his home. So he attacked the Israeli flag with a knife, saying that he wanted to abolish Jewish supremacy. And he also burned the Talmud by spraying it with gasoline. I think we should be able to do this in America. Now, Elon has decided that it was incitement to violence. And perhaps it is directly linked to this announcement. We're excited to announce that X has reinstated our relationship with the WFA Marketers Global Alliance for Responsible Media. X is committed to the safety of our global town square and proud to be part of the GARM community. That sounds like Linda Yaccarino stuff here. It sounds like Elon may have sold out for the advertisers. And I hope that this doesn't mean we are back to full-blown censorship. In any case, Lucas Gage is always pushing it to the limit. So yesterday I was watching his stream on Rumble, because he still has his Rumble, although he's been banned from Twitter for 6 months. For the first time, I've seen Twitter say 6 months in advance. Yes, and it's election year, and it's very unfortunate that we get to be deprived of a voice as part of the election process. So, and he was harassed on Rumble. There were thousands of people watching. But some of them, a minority of them, were harassers of his. And they start doxing him on his chat. And I'm like, hey, I have a phone. I felt like a normie for once. I never use my phone nor my phone number. In fact, whenever people locally say, what's your phone number? I'm like, I don't have a phone number. So it's really, I don't use my phone number. But I was like, hey, after all, I have a phone number. I'm a normie today. And I can just call Lucas Gage. And instead of receiving harassment and violence, he's going to hear the sweet voice of a French Canadian telling him to keep going and telling him love and good night. So I did that. And I ended up on the stream. He talked to me in his mic for like 10 seconds or 20 seconds. It was fun to speak with Lucas Gage again, an old friend of mine who I've seen in a troubled moment of his life. And I tried to bring positiveness to it. He seems to be doing good. And he seems that he has attracted a lot of attention to his Rumble channel as part of this all. But yeah, they made this whole story around Sarah is censored, another one who got banned under what seems to be a flailing of X back to censorship. And when censorship happens, there are people cheering for it, and someone exposed herself. Michaela Peterson. Michaela Peterson totally exposed herself in the last 2 days, because I've said for years, even if it's the far left doing the advocacy and the activism for censorship, the true beneficiaries of censorship are the center right, the center, and people who basically are competing with the far right, but couldn't sustain a debate with them, couldn't sustain the intellectual challenge. Ultimately, the silencing of the far right benefits these gatekeeping voices of these right hesitant centrists. And as part of the whole trouble that she's been, because now people are calling out Michaela Peterson because she's been rooting and cheering for censorship of the Nazis. It's weird how there are Nazis. I mean, it's full of Nazis on Twitter. And amazingly, her definition of a Nazi fits better to her father than it fits to the people she would want to see shut down, like Nick Fuentes. Amazingly, lately, her father has been divagating on Twitter and calling people filthy rats. Rats, unhuman. He's been dehumanizing people, including Nick Fuentes. And it's like, hey, now your daughter is calling for those who call other people rats should be banned from X, but that's Jordan Peterson. Jordan Peterson is much more evil and dehumanizing in his Twitter than Nick even is. Nick is straight to the point and he hits hard. But Nick is not as psychologically bent toward viciousness than Jordan Peterson. Jordan Peterson, you can see that he's looking for words of evil. You can see that he's dehumanizing in his intent. Ty Odyssey sends a super chat. He says, Jeff, did you see Leather Apron Club's video of him interviewing people at AF PAC and Turning Point? He then gave them the level one grip test and almost nobody could properly grip. Okay, I've seen clips of this video, but I haven't paid attention very much. And amazingly, you know, Jordan Peterson is diagnosing ridiculous accusations on his enemies on X. He says, never underestimate the capacity for evil of sad little man with mommy issues. I don't know why he types by separate line like this. I think he wants to give himself some depth that he doesn't have. But Cassandra McDonald rightfully points out, Jordan, I can't believe you have the audacity to say someone has mommy issues when you wrote about dreaming about your grandmother's vagina. I mean, this is Freud all over again. It's just a fucked up man, a man who's fucked up in the head. And just because of his own dysfunction, he ends up misdiagnosing everyone around him. So here he is claiming, yes, mommy issues in his enemies on X. But here's what he had to say about his own mommy issues. I dreamed I saw my maternal grandmother sitting by the bank of a swimming pool, which was also a river. In real life, she had been a victim of Alzheimer's disease and had regressed to a semi-conscious state. In the dream as well, she had lost her capacity for self-control. Her genital region was exposed dimly. It had the appearance of a thick mat of hair. She was stroking herself absent-mindedly. She walked over to me with a handful of pubic hair, compacted into something resembling a large artist paintbrush. She pushed this at my face. I raised my arm. This is a writing of Jordan Peterson about imagining is the vagina of his grandmother, where she takes some pubic hair from it and she stuffs it in his nose. This is a dream of Jordan Peterson that is so important that he shares it in maps of meaning. Okay, let's continue. To deflect her hand. Finally, unwilling to hurt her or interfere with her any further. I let her have her way. Wow. What the fuck? She stroked my face with the brush gently. Now he calls it a brush. It's still the pubic hair of his grandmother. And said like a child, isn't it soft? I looked at her ruined face and said, yes, grandma, it's soft. This is the guy diagnosing en masse mommy issues into the overall populations. Mommy issues. These little devil anonymous mommy issue people, they are the problem. Look at this. I mean, Michaela Peterson, was totally ratioed by Nick Fuentes, she had to delete the tweet. She started by saying, yes, I think the Nazis on X equating Jews with rats and using hashtags like hashtag filth should have more content moderation / censorship. No, I'm not retracting that statement. And like clockwork, no, I'm not retracting that statement, but hours later, she would retract her statement. Now, as she retracted her statement by deleting it on Twitter, she also said, but I'm not retracting my statement. I am just bringing precisions in another tweet. So we'll have a look at this tweet. But yeah, whether you bring precisions or not, if you delete an original statement and you don't restate it, you have retracted. Nick Fuentes was pointing out, it's not the Nazis calling Jews rats. It's your dad literally called me a rat last week. Thank you for exposing yourself and revealing who you really work for. Both of you freaks should be deported to Israel. Since you love it so much, they can have you. That is very swift response by Nick Fuentes. So let's see what eventually came to replace the post that was deleted by Michaela Peterson. Dad, Jordan Peterson, called me last night. Probably worried I was upset by the ex drama. I'm not. He said it was better to have less moderation, even on Nazi posts, so that other people can see it. I get the slippery slope argument too. It's just strange seeing Nazis. Well, okay, so she wanted to silence them in the other post. Now it's just strange. It's just a strange feeling. I'm not used to seeing Nazis. Amazingly, basically, Jordan Peterson was speaking with her in private and making a case that, look, we're going to have to tolerate them. We're going to have to tolerate. We won't have our safe space. It's better that way. It's better that way. Yeah, we've been making this case since 2016. And we've been saying to the world, you guys are fake liberals. You're not even good liberals. You're not good right-wingers. You're not good centrists. You're not good defenders of freedom of speech, for fuck's sake. Jordan Peterson is supposed to be the modern defense of free speech, right? Compelled speech. That was his old team when he rose to fame. My concern is if people are too dumb to see that screaming Jews are filth is the same as what the Nazis did, they will fall for the propaganda, like an entire nation did about 100 years ago. Oh, it's this never again, never again, and never again. X's ecosystem is also not representative of how these people would be viewed in the real world. Most of them would be beat up in high school, but the strength of groups online literally spreads to the real world, and this anti-Jew ideology is a seriously dangerous ideology. This is the second time in 2 weeks that we have a woman intellectual on the public space making the argument that in high school, you would have gotten owned by my quarterback boyfriend. In high school, you would be beaten up for your statement. What the fuck is happening in the woman mind? Now you get the whole principle behind these cheerleader, quarterback type of most beautiful couple of the high school. It's ultimately a female dream. Because Michaela Peterson has now moved on to internet conversation and arguments, and yet she still believes that somehow her high school days are a valid argument. That high school repression and having a bully beat you down is a way to win an argument. She thinks it's a way to win an argument retrospectively. In fact, virtually, she's saying, even if you were to make an argument today, I will judge it by whether you would get beaten up in high school for it. That is something very interesting, very primal, that's coming out of Michaela Peterson. Very deep. I don't think she realized how deep it is. But it is the female mind saying, ultimately, I'm fine getting raped by whoever wins. Ultimately, I want the brute who will out-brute you. Ultimately, I believe that my siding with jury is, if accompanied by enough violence, if accompanied by enough censorship, if I can beat you down until you acknowledge and kneel to my thoughts, then I win. It's might is right. What she's doing here with the high school, it's might is right. She's a fucking, like, fascist, Nietzschean, just super dangerous woman. That is what Michaela Peterson is. She fails certainly at being a liberal. In the real world, I'm working on my own company by my pool. Also, that is another thing. These women are convinced that they have made it. It's like, oh, I can work by a pool. I can direct my 2,000 employees from emails while getting tanned by the pool. We've seen this again and again in social media clip videos. They think it's a status signal. We can work by the pool here. So here's a little take into my life as a marketing manager for X. So I will start the day by a little espresso in my espresso machine. One shot delivery. And then you see the machine just spitting the espresso in the cup. Now I'm going to get by the pool and I'm just going to enjoy the rest of the day. I'm working on my own company by my pool. 99.9% of the people commenting are 35-year-old dudes somewhere basement, like using rumors. So see, we are less prestigious than Michaela Peterson. And here we are back into the mentality of the female, back into Anna Kasparian. I'm better than you. You're a 35-year-old dude in a dirty-looking basement. I love that she thinks it's bad. Like, first, the 35-year-old dude, contrary to you, 35-year-old woman, Michaela, he's at his peak. He's barely entering his peak. You are on the exit ramp, okay, Michaela? While you are on your exit ramp, the 35-year-old dude, let me tell you, is just starting. I can see it as a 40-year-old dude. You know, it gets better. Your value increases up to 40-year-old as a man and perhaps beyond. And being in a basement-like place, this is the dream of all men. Like, we want our workshop, we want our place where we can chop with a saw, where we can have our screwdrivers. We don't want to be by the pool. Are you fucking kidding me? We're going to get splashed, and you can't use electrical power tools by the pool. We don't want to be by a pool. Hey, I'm sorry, I'm opening parentheses within parentheses within parentheses, but this reminds me of what motivates women at going to Starbucks. Why are there so many liberal women bringing their laptops for hours of session, internet sessions at Starbucks? It's because they don't have a Twitter, so they can't brag like Michaela Peterson. I'm by the pool with my boobs and I'm working. So they have basically to go for the poor woman's option, which is the only place they can display this superiority of being relaxed at a laptop is at Starbucks beside a $5 coffee. Anyways, going back to what she says, the fact that people can see that this pro-Palestinian movement has spread from people being anti-war in Gaza to anti-Jews everywhere really quickly is insane. I'm worried about the safety of my Jewish friends. But I'm worried about the safety of Lucas Gage. I'm worried about the safety of Nick Fuentes when he gets dehumanized by your father. So the day you are willing to hear my worries about the safety of my people and about the asymmetry of the public conversation, where you are fine dehumanizing people, your father is fine dehumanizing people, I would like, before I'm asked to consider your suffering and your worries, that you consider mine too. Can we reach this point of equality where my speech won't be curtailed and yours won't be? Because this is what we've been demanding since 2016. And this is what you still want to deny us by your own tweet. You still want to deny it to us on the basis that we are some rats of some kinds. I still think the anti-Jew post floating around this platform should fall under hate speech. And that's already moderated on X. And I know that classification is tricky. Where is the line? What is hate speech? And now she goes on on these open-ended questions. Like, what even is? Like, have you ever asked yourself, what even is hate speech? Dipity, absolutely ridiculous statement. And it's not a correction of her statement to the extent that she repeats it just in a softer way. She says, I think it should fall under hate speech. So basically, you think it should be censored. And she is the first woman that I see attempting this one. Trying to argue that being ratioed is actually proving you right. Being ratioed by Nick Fuentes illustrates my point that X is popularizing a dangerous ideology by not grouping Nazi posts in with hate speech, which is already moderated. I didn't delete the original post. From fear, I expanded on it. It spinned because moderation is a tricky topic. Also, Nazism is a bad long-term strategy, Sam, especially for a senator. Okay, so we're still with the problem of defining the Nazi. And why would the Nazi have a special status? And ultimately, why you want that special status is a reflection of how much you overvalue the Jewish category as a category of victimization. To say that the Nazis should be subject to particular censorship because they're Nazis is to affirm nothing else than a form of Jewish supremacy. Ty Odyssey says, if JF ever were to debate the Petersons, I would have to say, give him hell. Oh, careful. Give him hell is fine when Jordan says it to a genocidal Israel president. But careful, when you say it that way, you know, they can interpret it as violence. Even if I'm not committing a genocide, and Benjamin Netanyahu was definitely committing a genocide, it's different. It's different. I will end with this as my thoughts on everything that's been happening, which is a tweet that made it to 800,000 views. So I was happy to get good coverage on this tweet. The non-intellectual normie centrists are getting wrecked on Twitter. like it's 2017. Nature is healing. Michaela Peterson is asking for censorship because she can't handle it, making poor arguments on Jewish IQ that were debunked years ago. By the way, just for those who aren't aware of the debunking that's been happening and all of the arguments I've been making also, first, there's the Letter Apron Club debunking. You can go check it out on his YouTube channel. As far as I'm concerned, I consider that the category of Jewish in those studies where they claim that they had found a higher Jewish IQ was too exclusive. I claim that they have selected, that Jews have self-selected, because when you ask someone, are you Jewish, you're going to get a range of responses. And someone may know that they're Jewish, and if they know, it's probably because they're part of a highly affluent family that has taught them that they were Jewish. Whereas a lower IQ family with less education and less tie to Jewish education systems might not even know that they're Jewish. So when you ask, are you Jewish? And when you go into selecting your population and defining Jewish as having attended this school or that school, you're already selecting for higher IQ. So I consider that there is not a single valid study that shows that Jews have a higher IQ. I believe that they are all flawed because they all have biased samples. Because when you ask someone, are you Caucasian? Are you white? Pretty much everyone will feel like they fall in that category. Educated or not educated, intelligent or not intelligent, it's very easy to feel white. I mean, it's harder and harder these days, but back in 1960, 1980, it's very easy to place yourself within whites, even if you're not totally white. You could have someone answering on these IQ questions and saying, I'm white, but they were maybe 75% white. Maybe they had a grandparent or a great-grandparent that was black. The Jews have a racial purity system that ensures that there's much less noise coming into their genetic pool. And so when you do a study like this, you will end up with biased samples. That's why I reject the claim that Jews on average are any more intelligent than Europeans on average. It's because there's not a single solid study making the case for it. Going back to my tweet, Jordan Peterson is pulling ridiculous straw man and guilt by association arguments against Fuentes, and one man had seized the opportunity to capture the right picture at the right time, a picture that would resonate in history up to this day, because the trolls of the internet, of course, are happy to put this in the face of Jordan Peterson. This is your product. This is your daughter going to get fucked by a Romanian pimp. And, you know, I like Andrew Tate to some extent. I kind of like some of the things he does. I don't want to demean him here, but certainly he is he is a Romanian pimp. And Michaela Peterson is his bitch. She has been held by the hip by Andrew. As to how censorial leftists are exposing themselves as the true beneficiaries of censorship, remember the day Elon Musk reinstated Fuentes, and he stated, let him be destroyed in the comments and community notes. Boy, was he wrong. It's everyone else instead that would be brought to the woodshed. The lesson is quite simple. Those who tried to avoid the fight for truth that we undertook in internet blood sports will have to face the consequences for attempting to withdraw from their intellectual duty. For 8 years, these gatekeepers, these liars, these servants of foreign interest, these bought-out talking heads have been acting like we don't exist, have been acting like our arguments don't exist, have been dehumanizing us, have been lying about us, have been surfing on other people lying about us, have been invoking hit pieces not to talk to us. The truth survives! The truth in the end. Eliphaz Levi had the right words for this. Only temporarily do we get to appreciate or judge the truth. In the end, the truth will judge us all. And it will judge these sellouts. Oh yeah, and Doubting Thomas, I had forgotten your super chat. He said, something Alex missed was that your plan to vote for Biden may have the opposite effect. Considering we are much in the minority, the right may be treated as too inflexible and ultimately ignored. Very similar to the libertarians. Absolutely. That would have been a good argument on the side of Alex Stein. Because the counter you give to my argument for Biden, my argument being, we have to vote Biden to punish Trump. The argument that he could have done, and that is so obvious, but he didn't do at all, is we have to avoid being too strictly right-wing, simply because the minority fringe position of the most extreme right will never please enough to win any election. And then we could have had an argument and I could have come back and said, you think so? I think that the most extreme right-wing position one day will be very tempting to a majority when they've had to endure enough of the leftism, when they've had to pay the price by their own children being turned to LGBT activism. That day, you can't imagine the level of extremism that will stem right from the people. When you fuck with people's reproduction, you're playing with matches. We'll be right back.